Get everything you need to bring home the holidays on Black Friday at Menards. Doors open 6 a.m. A Nerf Blaster Dog Toy Blast Tennis Ball 75 feet. Fun for you and your pup. Just $15.99. Delicious Dubai Chocolate is $12.99 a bag. Color-changing Squish Lamps and Performax Drill Bit Sets are only $4.99 each. Menards has great Black Friday gifts for everyone in your family. Doors open 6 a.m. on Black Friday. Good through November 30th. See Menards.com for details. Get everything you need to bring home the holidays on Black Friday at Menards. Doors open 6 a.m. A Nerf Blaster Dog Toy Blast Tennis Ball 75 feet. Fun for you and your pup. Just $15.99. Delicious Dubai Chocolate is $12.99 a bag. Color-changing Squish Lamps and Performax Drill Bit Sets are only $4.99 each. Menards has great Black Friday gifts for everyone in your family. Doors open 6 a.m. on Black Friday. Good through November 30th. See Menards.com for details.
Welcome to another edition of Beyond the Baseline, Inside Fordham Basketball. I'm Don Dwyer. On tap for this week's episode, the latest news from the recruiting trail, and newly signed freshmen from next year's class. We'll break down the non-conference, and then talk to local New York City college basketball reporter Jaden Daly of Daily Dose of Hoops to talk about the upcoming season and relive a little bit of the past. He's got a lot of good things to say about some players on this roster. So first, let's talk about the recruiting. Fordham landed its first commitment for the class of 2026. It's Frank Siaka Bay of the Fairfax Christian School in Virginia. The 6'9 forward had 12 D1 offers. He averaged 14 points and 7 boards a game last year. He had 6 20-plus point games on the season. This summer, he did an interview on X and said this about his game, quote, "I'm a high-effort, high-energy forward with elite footwork and the ability to finish around the rim through contact with both hands. I dominate 15 feet and in, not just scoring, but also setting up teammates. I can facilitate out of the post, especially when there's help or a double. Defensively, I'm very versatile. I can guard 2 through 5, whether off a switch, ice, ISO, blitz, and I'm active and disruptive. This summer, I'm focused on extending my range, making the catch and shoot 3 more consistent, and improving my strength and explosiveness." When asking about what program he's looking for, he said, "I'm looking for a good fit with a team that has a family-like environment. With the coaches, I'm looking for transparency and people I can connect, relate to on and off the floor. Academically, I want a program with a good, strong support system." So good news on the first signee to the Maroon and White. And I think a lot of the stuff that he said in that interview rang true of what Coach Magpio said in the offseason on what he's looking for certain players. And I think he can build and develop a player like that in his system. Don't know what it's going to be, a major impact early or maybe redshirt. Whatever it is, Coach Magpio knows how to get the best out of those players. And here's the thing, when you're talking about the Atlantic 10 and you're talking about a recruiting class, length, size is key in college basketball. I mean, you look at the next level in the NBA, we're not even looking at point guards smaller than 6'6", 6'7", at times. So I love to see Coach getting guys who can do a little bit of everything on the floor. Fordham coaches have also been spending a lot of time at Stepanak High School in White Plains. 6-foot forward guard Hassan Qureshi visited Fordham last week. Adam Zagoria's latest report on Zags Blog says assistant coach Ryan Hyland was at the open gym last Wednesday. This is what was said from Qureshi about this. He says that they are very committed, that they actually want me to get there. They're talking a lot to me during the weeks, and it shows that they actually want me. He said the visit went great, and he got to meet the new coaching staff, spend time with the team, and got to play a little bit in practice. When asked about Fordham's message, he said they were very open and honest with me, telling me that it's not going to be easy. Knowing that from the type of coach that Mike Magpio is, he's not going to fake it at all. He's going to tell me the truth at all times. He wants to make sure that I play hard. Last year, he averaged 11 points, 3 assists, and 5 rebounds a game. Interested to see how his recruiting class goes, as he's got Dayton, Richmond, Hofstra, and a bunch of others in the mix. So all eyes on there. Last Stepanak kid that came to the Rose Hill gym was the big Soriano. He stayed for a couple years and then went to St. John's, and we all know how he did on the Red Storm. Stepanak, really good programs with guys who have played at high majors over the last few years. So if Fordham can get a couple guys like that, not going to lie, that is going to be huge. So with 7 weeks to go until the start of the season, all these non-conference seasons and schedules have been released by schools across the country, and so was Fordham's, so let's highlight some of them. First off, the opener, November 4th, against NJIT at the Rose Hill Gym. Then they play Wagner, Iona, LIU, and two Division III opponents in Manhattanville and Mount St. Mary's. Iona, the only road game in November. The Rams do have an in-season tournament at the end of the month, the Northern Classic. It's in Montreal, in Canada. The teams include Colgate, Albany, D3 SUNY Oneonta, and D2 Franklin Pierce. I mean, you would like to see a lot more D1 opponents there. At least they're playing an in-season tournament. From the looks of those opponents, you got to win all of them. You got to win, and I know coaches said that. You got to win. It's a must-win up there. It's good experience, you just gotta win. So let's move on to the next month. As for December, the Rams host Holy Cross, Coach Paulson returned to the Rose Hill Gym, FDU, Manhattan for the Battle of the Bronx, and the brand new D1 program, University of New Haven, to wrap up the non-con on December 22nd. From talking to a lot of fans and people within the college basketball world, it's not a great schedule, folks, but it's a must-win. They have to finish 11-1 or 12-1, or it'll start to raise concerns, because honestly, the A-10 is only getting stronger. Here's the thing. Coach Magpio, in his introductory press conference, said the only way to get fans interested in the program and to show up is to win. So now they have to go out and actually do it. And here's some perspective on the strength of schedule as well. Shout out to Everything Fordham Hoops on Twitter. Must follow out there for bringing this to my attention. And he helped me put this into context. In a Bartovic.com rankings last year, Marist had the worst strength of schedule last season. Their opponent was an average of 286 overall. Now, here's the thing. Marist did have a good year and played really well in the MAC. So that's a good thing. Fordham's 25-26 projection this year, the average opponent is actually worse at 293. But if they can win like Marist did, I'll take it as a win. But that's the projection of what we're talking about. I mean, we're talking about D2 schools, D3 schools. So you got to win all those games. And here's the thing. I know they don't affect a lot of the rankings and the net and some of those things, but you've got to win those games by 20, 30. You got to dominate those games. That's how I feel about that. And almost get everyone involved. Play a deep bench and get some playing time for everyone. Feels like a bye game wasn't worth it for this program as I'm reviewing this stuff. Because here's the thing, a loss to Fordham could ruin people's bubble come March, and everyone wants to have that great resume come March Madness. And for me, like I said a couple seconds ago, it's win and that's it. Hoping the feeling of winning, building that confidence, and getting both offense and defense ready for the A-10 slate is a must. That's it for our intro and breakdown of some recent news. My interview with Jaden Daly coming up next.
Get everything you need to bring home the holidays on Black Friday at Menards. Doors open 6 a.m. A Nerf Blaster Dog Toy Blast Tennis Ball 75 feet. Fun for you and your pup. Just $15.99. Delicious Dubai Chocolate is $12.99 a bag. Color-changing Squish Lamps and Performax Drill Bit Sets are only $4.99 each. Menards has great Black Friday gifts for everyone in your family. Doors open 6 a.m. on Black Friday. Good through November 30th. See Menards.com for details.
I'm really happy to bring on my first guest, a guy who knows a lot about New York City basketball. He's run his website, Daily Dose of Hoops, since 2009, and has covered several Fordham teams during those years. Let's welcome in Jaden Daly. Jaden, thanks for coming on, my man. Appreciate it.
Donnie, it's my honor to be your first guest on this new endeavor. I'm looking forward to seeing how it plays out. It's going to really grow as time goes on, and it'll be a blast to watch and to listen to. We've had some great memories of some not so good Fordham teams over the years, if you're looking at pure wins and losses, but I'm really excited to come on and relive some of that and maybe even set the stage for this new phase that Fordham basketball is going into this coming season with Mike Magpio at the helm and maybe a different style, a different approach to what we've seen at the old gym over the last few years.
And I think that's, it's actually kind of funny. We've been through, the Bacoras, the Neubauers, the Neptunes, Ergos, you kind of name it. Now we're on another chapter, and I think it's exciting. College basketball starts in 7, 8 weeks. Are you ready for it all?
I usually can't say that I'm fully ready until probably the end of October, maybe a day or two before the season starts. And then it takes me like another 2 weeks to get into form with everything, with all the travel I do and covering this team, covering that team. And then by the time I feel like I'm into a groove, the season's half over. But that's the nature of the beast. And we adjust, we play on. So it's as good as it's going to get. The summer's been good. Trying to ramp myself back up in the preseason previews and stuff. So just take it one day at a time as it comes. I know it's cliched, but we're not any young anymore.
That is so true. I was going to say, how do you go about planning? Is it like looking at all the non-cons? Do you pull up all the local teams? How does that schedule work?
Yeah, my schedule usually isn't finalized until the end of September. And now, as it becomes harder to get non-conference games, it trickles into October. I have my priorities with the local Big East teams and the local MAC teams as well. And then from there, I just fill out any open dates with whatever in the area. So it's a multi-tiered approach, Donnie, if you want to categorize it that way. Some schools, unfortunately, get lost in the shuffle compared to some others. And I'd like to spread everything out equally, but when you have 10 or 15 mouths to feed like I do every year, it's easier said than done.
It's so true. And going off of basically your scheduling in the non-conference, Fordham's got a light one this year. I know a lot of fans haven't been really happy just because it's been filled with several non-D1 schools. But it is filled with two solid MAC teams, and you cover them very often, Iona, Manhattan. What should Ram fans expect out of those games this year?
Well, the Iona series is a home and home. It's been in the works for a couple of years now. I can't honestly remember the last time both those teams played one another. It was definitely before I started covering either of them.
It was
But
me when I started as a ball boy in 07.
there you go, my senior year of college. But I'm looking forward to watching Iona. It's going to be a new look Gales team. I'm going to feel like I'm 70 years old watching Dan Giroux as a head coach because I remember him taking Richmond to the Sweet 16 as a player in 2011. So that's going to be an interesting experience. A lot of new personnel. You'll see a lot of that Richmond influence on offense where you'll have backdoor cuts and 6'7", 6'8" guys that can pick and pop from outside. The rebounding might not be there right away, but it'll be a fun matchup for Fordham. It'll be a homecoming for DeJure Reeves, the big transfer that Mike Magpio got over the summer, who played last year at Iona and was the team's leading scorer in all MAC selection as well. And Manhattan in year three now under John Gallagher should be one of the teams to beat in the MAC. They bring back a nice core of players, including Will Sidnor, the MAC Rookie of the Year last year, and Jaden Winston, the junior point guard. Devin Dinkins, you may remember from his days at George Mason when he was on the bench. He'll be a starter for Manhattan this year. If the Jaspers can stay healthy, they're as good as anybody in that conference. And it's the Battle of the Bronx. Like Tom Pecoraro always used to say, you throw all the records out the window. Anything's up for grabs. Anything can happen in a rivalry game, and it'll be fun to watch.
It definitely will be. And, I'm interested in the Iona one just because of the relationship with Dro and Magpio. See how, they finally go up and battle against each other. And then the Manhattan one because it was a terrible loss last year for Fordham at the Draddy. And so I'm just interested to see how they bounce back from that. And especially I'm here in Manhattan's, like you said, most talented, almost most talented team in the MAC. So I'm curious how both those go.
Yeah, last year was Manhattan's first winning season since 2015 when Steve Masiello repeated as MAC champion with the Ashton Panky, Shane Richards, Emmy Andujar team. So it's been a long time since Manhattan has been able to enjoy that much success in 1 year. And you brought up a very good point with the connection between Mike Magpio and Dan Giroux talking about the Iona game where they were once roommates at one point, each trying to get their coaching careers off the ground. So they know each other really well. And the two of them also are very close with Kevin Hovde, the new head coach at Columbia, who was Giroux's roommate in college and comes off the national championship staff at Florida. So it might be interesting to see those two schools play Columbia in years to come. But you talk about personnel and guys who know each other really well. It's going to be a fun dynamic watching them try to match wits against each other.
And one thing I was going to follow up on that is basically Fordham's non-con schedule is a ton of home games. Like, it's literally Iona, the tournament in Canada, and I think that's about it. Everything else is home games. For, you know, how hard, if you talk to people or coaches, how hard is it to try to set up a non-con when you're a new coach? Is it, you just basically buying all these bye games, no one wants to play you? You know, you've talked to people throughout the ways. How hard is it to kind of develop a really strong schedule in year one?
Everybody's different, Donnie. Sometimes you get lucky in your first year as a coach and you inherit some bye games that were scheduled by the previous staff. But sometimes also you have the stigma of being a mid-major team in a good league like the A-10, where some other teams on your level are afraid to play you, either for fear of tanking their own metrics or not wanting to take a chance and hurt their resume when it could be padded somewhere else with a road game or a home game or a neutral site, what have you. It really depends on the situation. I can't say it's uniform for everybody, because one program might have a hard time getting games and then another program has the resources to buy more. Everybody is different when it comes to how much is in your budget and how much you have to play with, too. There are coaches that I've spoken to that have said flat out, we couldn't get games because they either weren't offering us enough or we didn't have enough to buy them.
Right. No, that makes a great point. Moving forward into that Iona matchup again is, you mentioned DeJour Reeves. You saw him play at Iona. It's going to be a comeback game for him as he heads back to New Rochelle. What should Ram fans expect from his play?
He's a good combo guard, and he's going to be a one-and-done guy as a fifth-year senior grad transfer. So I would compare him in that sense to a Darius Quisenberry type. But in reality, Donnie, when you watch DeJour play and you watch him work, he's a lot like Brandon Frazier. He can play on and off the ball. He can impact the offense and the defense in so many ways. He's a natural leader. He takes charge on his own. And when it comes to clutch shots, there's nobody on this roster you want with the ball in his hands more than DeJour Reeves. You'll be able to trust him right away. He almost never misses in crunch time, or at least every time I've covered him, it seems like he never misses. So that's something that Fordham hasn't had in a long time. And I think his charisma, his impact, and his pure talent is going to win him a lot of fans in Rose Hill sooner rather than later.
That's what I like to hear. And I like to hear that comparison, because I was curious who you're going to compare him to, because when Fordham's been successful, I was just thinking about this today, is they've always had dominant point guards or point guards that can control a game. You know, I feel like that is the most important thing in college basketball. Do you think he can be that leader and control the game on the floor?
Absolutely. I think his natural instinct to lead, to recognize the situation as it develops, is ahead of his time, ahead of his level. You're not going to see many guards in the 8-10 who have the headiness and the instincts that Reeves has that he brings to the floor. And in a lead where a lot of the top personnel is retooling, you look at St. Joe's with Rashear Fleming getting drafted, with Eric Reynolds graduating. You look at VCU having a new coach in Phil Martelli Jr. after Ryan Odom took the Virginia job. So that's going to take a little while to get used to in terms of style. You look at Dayton bringing in new personnel with Jordan Durkak coming from Rutgers. mentioned Iona, Adam Jai, the freshman point guard last year who played for Tobin Anderson and then went into the portal after Tobin got fired, ended up at Dayton, so Fordham fans will get to see him right away. DeJour Reeves' former backcourt partner. Mm-hmm. It's going to be an interesting mix at the top of the league, and I think Reeves stacks up to a lot of the incoming point guards that are coming into this league. He can play off the ball, too, so that combo versatility, Donnie, is even more valuable now in a time where, you know, positionless basketball becomes more and more in vogue and coaches are looking at guys for their potential and their athleticism as opposed to trying to jam a square peg into a round hole at a defined position per se.
And that's an excellent point. And it's something that, you know, Coach McPhail wants to do with his money ball aspect is like, okay, let's take a guy who, you know, can shoot the three and we'll maximize that. You know, we don't have to, you know, we're going to try to get the best out of this guy in a certain position and role we put him in. What do you think of that approach, or have you ever heard of it, or you know, I feel like it worked for Florida. They won the national championship, but what are your thoughts on that approach of analytics, buy low on some guys, develop them, make them the best that they can be? I feel like we haven't seen this approach in years, and only a certain group of guys are trying to use it.
Yeah, it's going to be fun to watch develop. You know, I haven't spoken to Mike since he was on staff with Kyle Smith at Columbia, and that was about 10 years ago. So he and I probably remember each other's names, but that's about it. But you brought up Florida, and when I spoke to Kevin Hovde at the Final Four, after he was announced as the incoming head coach at Columbia before he came up here and got his new team to work with, I asked him about the analytics and the reliance on analytics as a staff, and he gave me a lot of very insightful, very refreshing quotes where you're essentially watching a player's tape year-round before they even set up a visit or whatever. You look at guys in the portal and you see where they can impact you. You see an opportunity where you can make something fit or try to get the most of a current fit. And they have a file, a spreadsheet laid out. And Todd Golden also talked about this when he recruited Walter Clayton Jr. from Iona, about how his style of play already matched what Florida had and what he and his staff could enhance after the kid got there, which he did, and ended up leading them to a national championship. So you look at Fordham, you're going to see some different philosophies in recruiting. I think what might not have been the way to go on paper in recent years, there's going to be a different look, a different concept behind it where you might not think someone can contribute, but when you read between the lines and you see more of what they do without the ball or what they do in certain spots on the floor, you'll see it play out a lot better.
And I never even got your thoughts. What were your thoughts? There are a lot of candidates for the job. What were your thoughts on Fordham picking Coach McPhail?
Initially, I thought it came out of left field because Mike's a West Coast guy. Other than his couple of years at Columbia, he's a California native, went back to UC Riverside over the last 4 years and turned it into a winning program in the Midwest, where you have the smaller Cal State schools, you know, Cal Poly, Cal State Fullerton, Cal State Northridge, and he's been able to carve out a niche. Even if the NCAA tournaments may not be there, he finished over 500, and at a small school with lower resources than some schools we're familiar with up this way, that's not something to sneeze at. It's not something you take lightly. I think it was an outside-the-box hire, and when Ed Cole did the same thing 4 years ago with Kyle Neptune, look at how that worked out, Donnie. He turned a perennial bottom-tier Atlantic 10 program into a 500 team his first year, and you could say Keith Urgo's first year was really Neptune's second year because he inherited a lot of the guys that Kyle brought in, won 25 games and made that great run to the A-10 semifinals where Barclays was 75% full of Fordham fans, something that you and I hadn't seen at that point and may not see again for a while.
I mean, I'm getting chills right now because when they beat LaSalle in that game and the Let's Go Fordham chants were going on, and like it was loud and it was crazy. And I just, that year brought so many of us together, fans and alums as well. And it was just such an awesome time that like, we want that again. And I always have felt Fordham's like a sleeping giant in terms of there can be this great talent. There can be this, you know, great teams. I'm almost loving the storyline that's being put together because it's like Fordham's always been the underdog. So let's bring in a bunch of no-name guys or a new system, try it out, and then let's create some, you know, memories and some fan favorites that, you know, everyone's thinking, I want the sexy five-star recruits. Screw it. Let's get the two-star recruits, make them household names, and it'll be so much fun to watch.
Yeah, and in a way, it brings back some of the old Pecora guys, you know, the Mandel Thomases, the Ryan Canties, who maybe slipped through the cracks, but when they got on the floor, they were great supporting cast members, and they developed into serviceable starters that could really impact the game and swing the balance of it one way or another. And you talk about that LaSalle game. I remember talking to Tony Reale before that game tipped off, and the both of us were almost, I don't want to say amazed because it sounds too cliched, but I think the both of us were very overcome with what Fordham had turned into that year, because we all remember the nights at Rose Hill where Press Row was empty except for FUV and maybe two other people, me or whoever other small-time local outlet had nothing to do and covered a game on a Wednesday night. And to see Fordham take over in Brooklyn like that is proof of what this program can be when it's in the right hands. And I'd love to see that again. I really would.
I loved Rose Thrill when it was a thing. It hasn't been a thing since, but that energy and excitement, you know, what was that, a few years ago? It brought me back to when I was a ball boy, and you had national televised games at the Rose Hill Gym, and the floor is rocking. It's so loud, we can't even hear conversations between ourselves. And that's why that gym is so beautiful, is because it's got so much history. It's got amazing aesthetics, and it's just fun to watch a game in.
Still one of my favorite places to watch a game. I think the only place that I would say tops it would be the Palestra, but
I haven't been yet, but that is definitely on my schedule to go see that place. Well, speaking of that, you know, Fordham, like we've said, has had some tough times with winning, and you see a ton of other New York City facilities, Big East schools. What makes those stand out versus Fordham? I know they're trying to pump money in and get better practice facilities, this and that, but like, what has kept Fordham one step back in your thoughts?
I think the track record. You know, Fordham has a good alumni base, as you know, a good support base, but it's very much a what have you done for me lately basis. And St. John's, before Pitino got there, went through the same thing, where St. John's has a committed base, but a lot of roadblocks as well. A lot of fans, a lot of donors have inquired about Carnesecca Arena's long-term viability and maybe building a new on-campus venue, which is logistically impossible right now. And they actually just broke ground on a new practice facility that's going to open, I believe it's in 2027. So work on that is underway. But as far as facilities, you know, when you're in New York City and you don't have as much acreage, as much space as some other campuses in other parts of the country, that's another issue too. You can't try to compress something big into a small area. I think that's the other holdup that a lot of people lose sight of.
So I'll give you a story. I went to the St. Louis game a few years ago at the Chaffetz Arena, and met with the Big Era Fund, and Eddie Cole was still the AD at the time, and they toured the Chaffetz because they're like, could this be viable for Fordham basketball? And they basically were like, when this was built, the cost of the land plus everything it would take to do this, it would be about 20 times the price of what St. Louis basically was able to do because of where they're located, the cost of the land, everything. And so it's like, people don't realize sometimes how much it costs to do these upgrades or where to put it or anything like that. There is just so much that goes into it that it's not cheap at all.
No, and when you throw it in New York, the costs are astronomical.
Oh yeah, exactly. I mean, I got family still living there, and I think to myself, how do you guys even live there? 'Cause it's so expensive, you know?
Yeah.
Switching up, I've got the real question Fordham fans want to hear on X. You started this a while back. It is the most wonderful tweets we see come out. Why can't Fordham get guys like this? I never really asked you where did that come from and how did it become such a big thing? Did you see it becoming such a big thing?
You're actually the first person to ask me this on record, so I will gladly share this story. It's adapted from a colleague of mine, Jerry Beach, who covers Hofstra, and he also is a stringer for the wire services on the Mets and the Islanders. And he tweeted about some former Met one time, and I forget who it was. Why can't the Mets get guys like this after he came back to Citi Field and hit a home run or had some kind of go-ahead hit or whatever? And this was maybe 2015 or 2016 or so when I first noticed this, and it was right after Eric Paschal had transferred to Villanova.
Yep.
So obviously, me covering the Big East and seeing St. John's and Seton Hall, and now that they've come back, UConn, I've been able to see Paschal have better games maybe than he had his 1 year at Fordham, where he didn't have as much of a green light to shoot from three. I love Eric, but let's call it what it is. He was maybe a little trigger happy his freshman year, but one time he had a double double against somebody, and I said, why can't Fordham get guys like that? And it's taken on a life of its own, not just with Eric, but Marvin Dominique when he was all MAC at St. Peter's, John Sevier when he won a MAC title at Iona, Christian Seinfelder, Joe
Yep.
Chartouni when he transferred to Marquette. If I had a dollar for all these names, Donnie, we'd be
Nick
here all night.
Honor.
And I know you don't have enough space to record this whole segment. Nick Honor is another one. He hit a game winner against Manhattan at Draddy, and then ended up at Clemson and Mizzou after that. So that's the perfect example.
But that's the thing is like I feel like honestly with the new NIL and everything, I've been talking to a lot of people and this is where maybe Fordham becomes a player in all this because you know they might be able to keep those guys. They might be able to pay them a little more, you know, with the pay to play now. Maybe Fordham keeps these guys for a couple extra years, you know.
Yeah, that's the hope. And when you look at NIL at a mid-major level, a lot more of it is geared toward player retention. Whereas when you get to the power five level, it becomes trying to poach a free agent, so to speak.
And as a person who's reported on a lot of games in the Rose Hill Gym, what's one of your favorite memories?
My favorite one is my first one. My first game at Rose Hill was the St. John's game in 2010, where Fordham went down 21 points or whatever. Brenton Butler had four fouls in the first half. It was the night I met Ryan Rucco, actually. He called the game on Yes when Fordham had that local deal where Yes would produce couple of their broadcasts every year. And then Fordham fed off the crowd. It was a sellout and took matters into its own hands with a strong second half. Chris Gaston had a great game as well to make up for Butler being in foul trouble. That still, I couldn't have picked a better game to go up there for the first time. That has not been matched since. And then after that, I want to say, I think you were here for this one too, Donnie. The one and only game that Butler played at Rose Hill when Butler was in the A-10 for that one season. And after the game, Brad Stevens was just waxing poetic about the place and saying it reminded him of something out of the Hoosiers set, where he felt like he was in the movie, coaching on that sideline in that gym. And also my first game back there in 2023 against St. Bonaventure at the height of Urgo's 25 win year. I hadn't been back there since before COVID. The last time I went to a Fordham game, I covered a Fordham game before that was the 2019 Battle of the Bronx, and it was like 45 to 44 or something like that. It was an ugly overtime game at the height of the Jeff Neubauer run that we won't talk about. But that first game back there, so many memories came back, Donnie. It's like you go to see the Beatles before they blow up, and then the next thing you know, you're watching them at Shea Stadium. That was how Fordham a couple of years ago was for me, even though I only got to see maybe two or three games that year. But being back there and seeing a sellout and seeing an engaged crowd for the first time in a long time, for someone who built my website covering Fordham in the dead of January when nobody would show up and Pecora would question the attendance, that was something special, man.
Yeah, and that's what I was going to ask you is, you know, when you're at these major games, literally 3,800 or how many it could fit feels like 60,000 just because of how loud it gets in there. Oh, you know, yeah. You've also been to big arenas where it is the 60,000. What do you like more?
Give me, and I went to a Big East school and I grew up a North Carolina fan, but give me the little band boxes, the little 2,000, 3,000 seat gyms where the crowd is right on top of you. The sound systems rival those of a professional venue. Give me a game at Rose Hill. Give me a game at the Palestra. Give me a game at any of those old school gyms, and I'm a happy man for the rest of my day.
Amen to that. No, I'm with you 1,000%. I went to games at the Bradley Center when Marquette was there, full sold out. And don't get me wrong, it was awesome, wild, and crazy. But like the sound and the vibes, nothing compares to Rose Hill Gym.
Oh no, and I went to Fiserv Forum in February.
Yeah,
and it's already my favorite arena in the Big East. I only went out there when Marquette played UConn. I love that place. It's a palace.
Nice. It really is. It really is. Last thing, appreciate you being on here. How can people read your stuff? How could they find you? And what do you got in store in the future?
Absolutely. Primarily on Twitter at Daily Dose of Hoops, D-A-L-Y, Dose of Hoops. And if you put that into Google, I'll be the first hit that comes up if you want to see the written work that I and my staff do on the website. A lot of Big East, a lot of MAC coming into this coming season. Getting ready to cover our third Final Four in Indianapolis this coming April. And everything in between, I can't speak for what happens once the ball goes up, but we'll try to tell as great a story as possible in as little time we have. And a lot of filing from the train in the dead of night.
Awesome. That's what I love to hear. Well, appreciate you taking some time to talk with me, and hope to talk to you again.
My pleasure, Donnie. Always a pleasure talking to you. We got to get you back into New York one of these days.
Heck yeah, I'll be there, you know, just in a couple months.
Sounds good, brother.
I want to thank Jaden for taking some time and coming on this week. I've got a few more guests lined up, and I think a lot of you out there, you're going to enjoy them. I'll post a preview on X later in this week. It is a former player, a guy who is an awesome guy. We'll get a little preview. I don't want to tease everything and get you too excited yet, so stay tuned later in the week on X for that post. And remember to rate the podcast, give me a review on all those podcast platforms, wherever you listen, Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen. I'm Don Dwyer. We'll talk to you next week, and remember, go Rams.